We're in this series where we're looking at things that Jesus said, and this morning we're going to be again in Matthew, just a little bit later than where we were last week. Matthew chapter 7 is where we're going to be studying this morning in something that Jesus said. This is still part of the Sermon on the Mount, and so Jesus is talking about true discipleship, what it really looks like to be a genuine follower of Jesus, and I hope for you. That your desire is the same as mine, because I want to be a genuine follower of Jesus. I want to do the best that I possibly can and model what he describes. And so hopefully that's true of you as well, and that we can read these words, be challenged and changed by them. The reason that we're doing this series this summer is because we believe that the things that Jesus said matter. They're important, and we shouldn't ignore them. We should pay attention to them. We should focus in on them, and we should want to get them right. We should want to be able to hold true to what Jesus said and know what he said, what he meant. That's how I'm doing it. That's how I'm doing life. That's what I'm believing. That's what I'm trusting. So this week is one of those, we have to get it right, things that Jesus said, where if we get this wrong, we're going to make him look bad. We're going to make Christianity look bad. We might make ourselves look bad and others, and we want to get this one right. This is one of these things that we need to stop twisting or abusing maybe what we think it means in order to fit our own agendas. So I want to show you what Jesus said. We're going to look at it in Matthew chapter 7, verse 1, and then we'll talk about it. So what Jesus said initially in Matthew chapter 7, verse 1 is, "Do not judge, or you too will be judged. Do not judge, or you too will be judged." Now, that's the NIV version. You may be looking at a different version that may have a few other words in there, lest or that. But at face value, that verse, "Do not judge or you too will be judged," has been taken out of context by Christians and non-Christians alike. At first glance, the casual observer will read and has read, "Don't judge anyone." Right? Don't judge anyone. That's kind of the common popular takeaway from that. Don't judge anyone. And if you don't want to be judged, don't judge. And we've taken this, Christians, but also non-Christians too, and we've even defended, "You can't judge me." Matthew chapter 7, verse 1, "You can't judge me." Right? You can't tell me I'm wrong. Jesus said, "Do not judge." You can't tell me I'm wrong. But non-Christians, and this is where it gets confusing, use the same words to tell Christians, "You can't judge me. You can't judge my lifestyle. You can't judge my beliefs, because your own leader, Jesus, said, 'Do not judge.'" Right? And we've taken this to mean that, or you may have heard it said, "Only God can judge me." Right? Only God can judge me. And countless people have literally tattooed that phrase on their body, that only God can judge them, as a justification for being who they are, for living how they want to live, or not wanting to be criticized, not wanting to be corrected. And sometimes, like I said, this is used against Christians by others and causes confusion, right? "Don't judge me." Even Jesus said, "You can't judge me." And then as a Christian, we're left with this confusing, "We kind of did, but I feel like what you're doing is wrong, but you're right. Jesus did say, 'Do not judge.'" So we're in this space where we look at others, non-Christians, but also Christians, and we're not sure, can I judge them? Am I not supposed to judge them? Did Jesus literally mean, "Do not judge other people"? And hopefully we're going to answer this today and give us all a better idea of what to do with this, give us a concrete understanding of what Jesus is expecting of his true followers, because we want to walk through those doors confident that we can obey him, that we can honor him, and I want to follow him the best way that I can, that he's expecting. Don't you? So I want to get this right. I want to get this right and know, leaving, that I'm a little bit closer to getting it right than when we started. And so, as always, and I already used this word, but context matters. Context matters when you read, specifically and importantly, what Jesus said, but a lot of the New Testament, context matters. And when I say that, Or when I say maybe the idea that this verse has been taken out of context, I mean that the things that this is a part of, it's a part of a larger conversation. What Jesus said is a part of a larger situation. It's spoken to specific people for specific reasons. And it's important to know the bigger situation, the bigger conversation, who he's speaking to, and the reasons that he's saying this. And we should always understand the bigger picture before we just take a verse and slap it on a bumper sticker or put it on a coffee mug or a wall decal and say, this is my verse. We should always want to make sure that we understand the bigger picture, the better understanding of where this came from, what it's saying, because oftentimes our coffee mug verses don't mean what they think they mean, but they feel good when we hear them by themselves, right? And we want to make sure that we don't do that. We don't want to pick and choose, because the Bible isn't just this collection of sayings that you can choose to fit different areas of your life or different thoughts or behaviors and say, well, this is my verse because it fits where I'm at. The Bible is communication from God, and it's meant to be studied. It's meant to be understood, and it's meant to be applied the way that God meant it to be understood and applied, not the way that you want it to be applied, not the way that matches how you feel. It doesn't really matter how you feel. If God says it and it contradicts, he's right, not you. And so we want to make sure that we understand. We want to study the Bible and get God's meaning, not our meaning. And so the larger conversation, the larger situation here, the bigger picture matters. It matters when we see what Jesus said. So it's important for us first to understand what Jesus means when he uses the word, translated in English, judge. What is he meaning? Because we get an idea in our mind when we hear the word judge. We have a very specific idea in our mind. And I will tell you, the idea that Jesus has in his mind is slightly different than ours. They're very similar, but it's a little bit different. Ours is more harsh, I would say. But in its most simple form, the word that Jesus used there, do not judge, or you too will be judged, has the idea of making a determination based on discerning facts. You observe or you hear the facts, you make a decision, you make a conclusion, you make a determination on those facts. You arrive at a final conclusion. You've judged, you've heard all of it, you make a judgment. It's making an opinion. It's forming a thought based on what you observe, based on what you see. And this is important to understand, this discernment, this criticism, this conclusion, because Jesus teaches his followers... Read the New Testament. Jesus teaches his followers to be discerning, to discern what you hear, to discern what you observe in others. He teaches his followers to make conclusions about things that they see, about things that they've heard, about truth that has been taught. He teaches his followers to evaluate people. He teaches them to form opinions, not to be tossed by every whim of philosophy and thought. He teaches them to evaluate, to make determinations. And Jesus himself didn't hesitate to label people, to call it as he saw it and as he observed. He didn't hesitate to make his own determinations, to render verdicts of others. Jesus didn't hesitate to criticize other people. And the New Testament makes it a point to tell us at times to definitely form convictions, form opinions about others, make final conclusions, be discerning of other people's words and their actions, be critical, defend truth, address sinfulness for God's reputation, but also for others' spiritual health and growth. Evaluate, discern, form an opinion, judge them, judge other people, judge what you hear. Jesus and the Bible demonstrate and encourage judgment. So since that's true, since when you read, Jesus does a lot of judging and encourages a lot of judgment in his followers, and the New Testament teaches us to be discerning and evaluating and critical of the people that we hear and even label them. Well, that's a false teacher. That their belief isn't genuine. How dare you judge someone else? Would be the reaction if Jesus here is saying, don't ever judge. So if Jesus is encouraging that discernment and that criticism and that evaluation and those conclusions, we need to dig deeper then before we start tattooing only God can judge me on our forearms and using that as our defense to never be criticized. So what does Jesus mean in this specific case, do not judge? Because that's what he said, right? What does he mean here? So let's go back to the context again. It's important to remember when you read the Gospels, specifically Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, when you read the Gospels, that often the different biographers of Jesus chose to record the same story, or the same situation, but with varying degrees of selection of Jesus' words. And you may have read that. You may have read one account, and then you read another account, and you're thinking, oh, well, this one says he said this, but this one records him as saying something slightly different. And it's not deceptive. The authors aren't trying to be deceptive. They're being selective because they have a purpose for which they're writing. They have an agenda. They want to teach you something about Jesus. They're describing his life, but they're trying to push you in a direction, a conclusion about Jesus. Maybe imagine it like different camera angles during a movie filming, right? Depending on which camera angle you get, you're going to get a different picture. You're going to get a different understanding. They're recording the same event. They're just giving you a different angle, a different understanding. They want to emphasize something else. Maybe one wants to get the reaction of the people in the background, while the other one wants to get exactly what's being said, right? Each biographer takes a slightly different approach. It's inspired by God, right? So it's what God wanted to draw out of that conversation for Matthew's purposes, or Mark's, or John's, or as we're going to see, Luke's purpose. Luke's account of this sermon in this situation really breaks open what Jesus was really trying to communicate. He records what Jesus was saying, but he reveals something more in Jesus' words that gives us a much better idea of what's being discussed, of what's in Jesus' mind, and what he means by judge. And so, since Jesus clearly supports judging others, right, in teaching and in situations, what they say, what they're doing, what we're going to see, and I'm going to spoil it, what we're going to see is that there are different types or different spirits of judgment. Spirit meaning motivation or the spirit in which you do something. And it's one thing to discern. It's one thing to be critical of. It's one thing to develop an opinion or make a conclusion regarding something. But it's another thing entirely what you do with it. What you do with the criticism, what you do with the evaluation, what you do with the conclusion from what you've observed in someone else or what you're hearing, it's one thing to make that conclusion. It's another thing entirely what you do with it. And this is what we discover when we read the rest of the Bible. There are different, I'm going to use a word here that may sound odd, but you'll see why I do it as we go on. There's different flavors of judgment. There's different flavors of judgment. And this is exactly what Luke reveals to us that Jesus had in mind when he's talking about judgment. When we read in Matthew chapter 7, verse 1, do not judge or you too will be judged. Matthew only has one type in mind. When he says judge, he only has one type that he's focused in on, and he's assuming that his audience gets, in their world, there's different flavors of judgment. Matthew's assuming that everybody is getting what he means when he says judgment. Luke gives us a little bit bigger picture of it, though. He gives us a more balanced account. So Luke chapter 6, verses 37 to 38. I'll have them up here on the screen, but if you feel inclined to turn there, you can. But Luke chapter 6, verses 37 to 38. This is the same sermon. Do not judge, and you will not be judged. Sounds familiar. Do not condemn, and you will not be condemned. Forgive, and you will be forgiven. Give, and it will be given to you. A good measure, pressed down, shaken together, and running over, will be poured into your lap. For with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. So if you just scan Matthew chapter 7, and we're going to read through verse 5 eventually, you'll notice similarities. There's similarities in what is being said here, what is being spoken here by Jesus. So if you have Matthew 7 open in front of you and you see here on the screen Luke 6, you can compare them. Do not judge or you too will be judged. Right? Verse 2, with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. But Luke gives us a little bit more here, right? He gives us a little bit more expansion. He includes greater detail in Jesus' explanation with a more complete account of this. There's a metaphor in here, right? There's a metaphor in here where Matthew just says with whatever you measure, you use, it will be measured to you. Luke gives us a much more vivid picture of this metaphor. And it helps us understand it. There are different flavors of judgment, and Luke records Jesus as essentially giving us a recipe. Jesus gives us a recipe for the different flavors of judgment. Judgment can be mixed with condemnation. Judgment can be mixed with forgiveness. Judgment can be mixed with grace. And Jesus gives this beautiful illustration of taking that judgment, that criticism, that conclusion, that evaluation of what you're seeing or hearing, and taking that discernment and measuring it out with something else, another ingredient, and pressing it down into a container and shaking it up, that judgment with the other flavor, right? And we'll get back to that recipe, the results of that recipe that Luke talks here. But clearly Jesus sees there are different flavors, there are different recipes, there's different versions of judgment. But Matthew, when he's writing, he assumes his audience knows this, right? That there's different kinds of judgment with different results. So he just quotes Jesus as saying, do not judge. Context matters. It's important to understand everything that's being said here. And that's not all Jesus said. If you look back at Matthew chapter 7, verse 1, Jesus didn't only say, do not judge. That's only part of his sentence, right? This drives us nuts when they do this with politicians, right? When they only take a little bit of what the politician said, and then they accuse them of this, this, or that, and you just say, why don't you play the whole tape, right? Doesn't even matter what party you're on, everybody does it, and you just think, why don't you just let us hear everything they said and make our own determination, right? But sometimes we go, he said, do not judge. No, I mean, yes, he said, do not judge, but keep reading. Do not judge, but the rest of the sentence matters too. His full statement is, do not judge, or you too will be judged. Now this, and maybe we don't quote the whole sentence because this second half is a little more difficult to translate. And based on my study, it's not, if you're reading the NIV, it's not translated well in the NIV. And the hitch or the catch is that or. That word there, or, it's a word in Greek that can mean a number of things. And it's tough to really discern the whole phrase, what Jesus is intending here, what Matthew is recording Jesus is saying. In fact, and it's revealed, some of your versions say, do not judge lest you be judged, right? And other versions say, do not judge that you will be judged, which is actually even more confusing because you read that and you're like, do not judge that you be judged. It's a little more confusing, but that's actually more accurate to what the word literally means. But admittedly, the English equivalent of this phrase is hard to find. It's hard to find. How would we say this in English? And so some versions just choose to translate it, that you be judged. Others try to make those conclusions for you. But we don't want to add too many words that aren't there in the original. If you have the New Living Translation, it actually comes the closest. It translates the meaning best. The New Living Translation says, do not judge and you will not be judged. Do not judge, and you will not be judged. But even that, we can't hear Jesus' tone. We can't hear the way he's delivering this, and that makes it hard sometimes when you read this. Because remember, he's speaking it. He's talking in a very real situation, a very real context. People are reacting to what he's saying, right? And he's trying to get them to move from a very rigid, strict Jewish view of religion. And he's trying to get them out of that into a, what does it really mean to follow Jesus? And so he says, do not judge and you will not be judged. But without tone, this suggests that if you want to live without judgment, then just don't judge anyone else. It's kind of what it sounds like, right? If you don't want to be judged, just don't judge anyone else. But that's not That's not what this phrase means. That's just how it sounds in English. And remember, Jesus wasn't speaking English. The authors weren't writing in English. What Jesus' meaning is, and we'll read the rest, and we're going to see, if you read, just read, scan verses 3 to 5, he's not saying don't judge anyone. Right? You're going to see very quickly that he's not even coming close to saying don't judge anyone. What he's saying with his sentence structure here is, don't judge without understanding that you will be judged in return. Don't judge without expectation of return judgment. When you judge, know it's coming back to you. It's going to be returned. Or maybe even more clear, judge with the understanding that you'll be judged too. This is what Jesus means. Not, if you don't want to be judged, don't judge anyone. No, when you judge, know it's going to come back on you. Which really suggests what? Judge carefully, right? Judge carefully. Not don't judge, judge carefully, and judge knowing it's going to come back. And his initial point is to criticize a hypercritical, a self-righteous, a haughty judgment that only goes one way, looking down on another person that comes across as untouchable, where you're wrong, I'm always right, and that's it, right? It's a self-righteous, haughty, hypercritical nature in people that judges other people and never allow themselves to be touched with judgment. That's what Jesus is criticizing. He's criticizing these Jews who said, I am always right, you are always wrong, and he's saying, no, you're often wrong. It's one thing to say you're wrong, it's another thing to say, tell me where I'm wrong. And you never do that. You always only judge one way. Do not judge without the understanding that you should be judged too. You should be criticized too. You should be evaluated. People should discern your actions and come to conclusions about what you're doing and what you're saying. This I'm perfect and you're not has no place in following Jesus. That's not how followers of Jesus judge. Judgment, good judgment, biblical judgment, the true disciple judges with the expectation that this is mutual. I'm not untouchable. Judge me in return. Please, judge expecting to be judged in return. The believer, the Christian, is not untouchable in judgment. They shouldn't avoid judgment. Instead, judgment should be mutual among believers. Judgment should be expected among believers. Judgment should be welcomed among believers. I think that's the first blank that you have there in your worship guide. Judgment should be mutual, expected, and welcomed. This is what Jesus is saying. Not don't judge, judge and expect it back, welcome it back, intend for it to come back on you. Judgment should be mutual, expected, and welcomed. Because he continues in verse 2. For in the same way, same manner, in the same way you judge others, you will be judged, and with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. In the same way you judge others, you will be judged. Don't run from that. Expect it. As we've said, Jesus isn't telling us to avoid judging others. He's telling us, his followers, don't judge others with an untouchable attitude. You aren't perfect. I'm sorry. So don't judge someone else. Don't criticize someone else with an expectation that you're untouchable. Criticize, right? Judge and evaluate and expect it in return in the same way. So because we expect and anticipate and we welcome as followers of Jesus, we welcome mutual judgment. Since it's coming back to me, judge others in the way you want it to be returned. Judge others with the recipe you most like. The one that you like the taste the most, the one that is most pleasing in a way or most effective to you, judge others in that way, in the way you'd like to be judged. So the question isn't, should I judge other people? The question is, what recipe of judgment do you want? Right? Judge other people with the recipe that you'd want because it's going to come back to you. What recipe do you want other believers, other disciples to use on you? And we all have our own understanding and our own desires in this area. And this is where the metaphor that Luke records is awesome because it gives us clarity on what Jesus is saying, and you can imagine it, the way that Luke records this so well. Look again at Luke chapter 6, verse 38. He says, "A good measure, you've taken both, pressed down and shaken together, and then running over, spilling out the top, will be poured onto your lap, for with the measure you use, it will be measured to you." So thanks to Luke, we can see that you take judgment, right? A discerning, evaluating idea of what you've observed in someone else's life or someone else's words or whatever it might be, and you take this judgment, you're concerned with something that you've seen in someone else, and if you add condemnation to it, I'm going to go put them in their place. I'm going to go put them in their place. I'm going to go sit them down. I'm going to give them a piece of my mind because that's unacceptable. Maybe it isn't acceptable. You'll measure the judgment with the condemnation out. You'll shake them up. But while you're mixing it, while you're making that judgment and pressing hard to compact it down, it'll fall in your own lap. Some of it's going to come out the top, and it's going to fall into your own lap, and it's going to be all over you as well. You'll get it back, which is how this should work, because judgment is mutual. Judgment is expected. It should be welcomed among believers. This should work. These conclusions, this discernment, this opinion among Christians is mutual. It's anticipated and it's welcomed. And so whatever recipe you want to fall back on you, shake it up in there and use that. Maybe you disagree with someone else. Maybe you're concerned with what you see in someone else's life or their words or their actions, and you think, "I wouldn't have done that. I wouldn't have done that," or I don't like this. I don't like what I'm seeing here, and I don't know that it lines up biblically. I don't know that it matches with the Christian testimony. I don't know if it makes God look good. I don't know if it matches up with His truth, and maybe you think that, but what are you going to mix that with? When you think that, when you make that evaluation, when you make that criticism, when you make that judgment, what are you going to mix it with? Because whatever you mix that with is going to fall into your own lap too. Are you untouchable where you think, "I can shake this out here and it won't ever touch me"? No, it's going to fall into your own lap too. And so whatever recipe you use, it better be the recipe that you want in return. So maybe we should consider, when we judge, because it's mutual, because it's expected, because it should be welcomed among Christians, maybe we should consider the best recipe to use with our criticism. Maybe we should mix our judgment not very frequently with condemnation, but instead with forgiveness. He mentions that in verse 37 of Luke chapter 6. Maybe we should mix it with forgiveness. Maybe we should offer our judgment or our verdict or our conclusion of someone else's actions or words in a way that correctly identifies, right, the truth, maybe the issue or the error, and then says, "But I'm not going to hold this against you. I get it. You messed up, and maybe this is an error. Maybe this is a blind spot for you. I'm not going to hold this against you. I'm going to let this go. But I wanted you to hear the truth. But this is the last we're going to talk about it." Is that the kind of recipe you would want with the judgment that someone might have on you, where they wouldn't just write you off and say, "This is who you are"? Maybe you would appreciate that kind of evaluation that says, "I think this is an error, but I'm just going to leave it here. I'm just going to leave it here, and I'm going to forgive it, or I'm going to let it go. I want you to know I think it's an issue. I want you to know this hurt, or I think this is wrong, but I'm also going to bury it right here. And I'm not going to come back and dig it up. I've judged, but with a recipe of forgiveness. It's on you now, it's on them now, and their conscience, what they do with it. I'm done with it." Or what about mixing our judgment with giving instead? Maybe we should offer our judgment in a way that's followed by grace, followed by help, by giving, by reaching out and helping with the same amount of judgment. And this is what Paul says in Galatians chapter 6. Specifically in verse 1, where he says, "Brothers and sisters, if someone is caught in sin," not "you caught them, gotcha," but "you find that they are trapped in sin, you who live by the Spirit should restore that person gently. Just watch yourselves, or you may also be tempted." But Paul there is saying, make a judgment, make a discernment, observe, this person's stuck in sin, this person has an issue, this person, right? Is I'm discerning, I'm observing, I'm seeing, I'm criticizing. There's truth that's being ignored here. There's error that's in their life. Make a judgment, make an evaluation that a person is trapped in sin or caught in something else. Or as he tells Timothy later on, that their thinking maybe needs corrected, but then offer help with the judgment that gets them beyond the trap, that gets them beyond that sin, beyond that thinking. I've said this before, too often we point the finger instead of extending the hand. When we see other people, we make that judgment. That's not hard for us. But instead of extending the hand and offering help with the judgment, we instead point the finger at them and say, shame on you. Shame on you for getting yourself in that position. How could you? Instead of saying, this is bad. How can I help? How can I help? Mix judgment with giving. Choose the right recipe, the right flavor of judgment, because judgment is mutual. And when you are trapped in sin and struggling, do you want someone to come along pointing the finger at you, or wouldn't you die for someone to extend that hand and say, I'm going to help you. Let's walk through this together. Wouldn't you crave that? Wouldn't you want that kind of recipe of judgment? Don't judge without the expectation that it's mutual and it'll fall into your lap as well. We should want others to come alongside us with how they perceive our lives, what they've come to concluded based on biblical truth. But do you want them to come writing you off with condemnation, or do you want them to come with forgiveness or generosity and grace? Whatever recipe of judgment you make for others, it'll fall back into your own lap. And true followers of Jesus don't not judge. True followers of Jesus practice healthy mutual judgment with the same recipe you'd want. The same principle that you see here, judge others with the recipe that you'd want, the same principle can apply with the world around us as well. And we forget this. Too often Christians can be so harsh with their judgment of an unbelieving world because nearly everything they do doesn't match up with the Bible. Too often we can be harsh with people who are far from God, who can't be expected to value or think like we do, and yet we expect them to value and think and act like we do. And we tend to judge them with condemnation, with finality. We write them off. We mix up this big heaping recipe of judgment and condemnation. We throw it in their lap and we write them off because of how they live and what they think and what they say and how they present themselves and the lifestyles and the values and how critical they are of ours. And they're responding in kind because we've written them off. We've mixed judgment with condemnation too often. And so what would we expect in return? Judgment with condemnation. We're closed-minded, intolerant bigots, whatever it might be. Shouldn't surprise you when we mix up the same kind of judgment and serve it to them. But God hasn't written them off. God has judged them, yes, but he's also mixed it with forgiveness and grace and kindness and love. So shouldn't we mix up that same recipe of judgment and be able to look at them and say, this is wrong, this isn't okay, this doesn't match up with what God says, but he has forgiven you, he loves you, and so do I. And let's work through this and walk through this and find what God is offering you in salvation. Judge, be discerning, identify the errors, identify the falsehoods in our society, in our community, in those around you, the immorality of the world. Offer that criticism, but mix it with forgiveness, mix it with grace, mix it with the same things that God offered you alongside of his criticism and his judgment of your heart and your life. It's the same recipe. We should give others, even those who aren't Christian. Judge others with the recipe that you'd want. Now, there's one more aspect to healthy judgment that we see in Matthew chapter 7. First, though, judgment should be mutual, expected, and welcomed among believers. We should judge others with the recipe that we would want to be judged with. But then we see the last one in Matthew chapter 7, verse 3. It says, why do you look at the speck of sawdust and your brother's eye, and pay no attention to the plank in your eye? How can you say to your brother, let me take the speck out of your eye, when all the time there is a plank in your own eye? You hypocrite, first take the plank out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. Most of you aren't woodworkers, so let's imagine you're eating salad. and you look across the table at your husband or wife or brother or sister or whoever it might be, and you see that they have a big piece of leafy green in their teeth, and you say, you got something there. Wouldn't you expect them to go, yeah, you should see your grill. You should see how much is going on in there. Wouldn't you expect that, right? You would expect that they would give it back in return. Don't assume you're eating the same salad. Don't assume there's nothing here when you're pointing it out to them. Don't be shocked when they come back with that. That makes a, maybe it fits a little bit more of your context than those who aren't, you know, who are carpenters. Jesus was a carpenter, right? And so he's giving an illustration that I don't know how many sawdust splinters he got in his eye, but clearly this is a thing that people who work in his day understand, getting this stuff in your eyes. But it's hard for us to follow that illustration, but he gives us this further layer of an approach to judgment in a healthy way, and it's this ridiculous mental image, right? It's a crazy mental image for us to imagine. Like, the sawdust thing is one thing, but apparently from his carpentry days, like, safety glasses weren't a thing, but sawdust and splinters were. And so he describes noticing that your buddy has some sawdust or a fleck of wood on his face, in his eye even. He says, before you suggest to him that he needs help getting that out, before you act on your own judgment, you've evaluated, you've noticed, consider if he's looking at you and if you've got a giant piece of wood in yours. And he actually uses the word for a rafter. That's the word, that plank. He uses the word for a rafter in his day. But notice he doesn't say, don't address it. Right? Look at verse 5. He doesn't say, don't address it. He's expecting you to address it. So let's get off the Jesus said, don't judge train. It's not true. He said, judge with the right recipe, right? Judge with it being mutual and expected. And then this is, in this case, he's saying, when you judge someone, use it as an opportunity to do a little bit of self-judging. As when you notice the leafy green and the person across the table, maybe you should first go, you've got something in your teeth, right? When you do a little bit of self-judging, mutual judgment is healthy and welcome, and it should go hand in hand with self-judgment. Mutual judgment, criticizing, evaluating each other based on biblical truth is healthy, it's important, it's expected, it should be welcomed, but it also should go hand in hand with self-judgment, because we don't want to be hypercritical. We don't want to be untouchable. And so ask yourself, if I see something in them, I wonder what others are seeing in me. Have you ever noticed someone else's morning breath and thought, I wonder if, yeah, okay, we should both go brush our teeth, right? If I see something in someone else, I wonder what they're seeing in me. Maybe you aren't seeing clearly because you've got your own problem. Maybe you're seeing clearly, but you've got other issues, other problems. You know judgment should be mutual for Christians and you should welcome it, but why not make it easier for everyone and do some self-judgment first? Do some self-judgment while you're interacting with others. Sometimes we take this to say this speck and mote, or a speck and plank, we take this to say, I have to be perfect before I approach someone else. If I'm going to approach somebody else, I have to be perfect. I have to have my stuff figured out before I can give anybody else an evaluation or a conclusion or a confrontation. No, you don't, because the recipe that you use matters. And the recipe that you use with them will fall into your lap and will be returned to you. It'll be mutual, and it should be expected that it'll be mutual. You aren't untouchable, and it'll go a long way if you come into it already having done some self-judgment and then approach it with judgment and forgiveness, or judgment and grace, and mix it up and put it out there, because then, having done the self-judgment, you know, I've got some stuff too, but praise God, this is going to be mutual, and you're going to come back with a little bit of grace and a little bit of forgiveness and a little bit of help. The recipe you use matters. James tells us to look into the Bible like a mirror and fix what it reveals is broken. We should be doing that. David says, ask God and he will show you for sure. If you ask him, he'll show you. John says, if you say, I don't have anything to work on, you're a liar. There's always something to work on. So just as much as mutual judgment is healthy and welcome, it should go hand in hand with self-judgment simultaneously. And you won't be surprised when they go, can I offer some suggestion? Like, sure, yeah, because I know. Is it this area? Because I know. This is bad. We're working on this. Criticize your own adherence to the truth. Evaluate your own consistency in belief and action. Dissect your own imaging of Christ. Your own struggles with sin. Address them just as much as you address what you find in others. Judgment should be mutual. It should be welcomed. It should be expected among Christians. And the recipe that you use matters, but it should go hand in hand simultaneously with self-judgment. Where if I'm evaluating you just as much, I'm evaluating myself. And if you're evaluating me just as much, you're evaluating yourself. And that is a two-way street. And it is mutual, and it is healthy, and I promise you, we will grow because of it. You will grow because of it. Jesus didn't say, don't judge, only God can judge you. He said, judge and expect to be judged in return. So do it right, do it well, and do it to yourself. We're bad at this. We practice unhealthy judgment. We either don't judge at all because we think we're not supposed to, and that doesn't help anyone. That's not healthy. Or we're quick to judge others, and then we're quick to defend and whitewash ourselves. I got all this figured out, but you don't. We see other people's forests and only one of our trees. Judgment of others, whether it's non-Christian or Christian alike, is biblical. But it's only healthy and biblical when it is mutual, when we anticipate it, when we welcome it in return, when we use the best recipe, the one we want to fall into our own lap when it's shaken up. And it goes hand in hand with ample amounts of self-judgment. So start there. But judge others in a healthy way. Expect it in return. Use that recipe that you would want and evaluate yourself too. Every one of us in this room is fortunate that when God judges us, yes, his recipe includes condemnation of our sin, but he also includes forgiveness and grace, among other things. And we are so blessed that that is true, because he could mix in only condemnation and he would be right. But we are fortunate that he mixes in forgiveness and grace. And many of us, as Peter said, have tasted, and God is good. We've tasted his judgment. Instead of tasting only the bitterness of condemnation, we've tasted that grace, we've tasted that forgiveness, and we have concluded, this is good, this is very good. And we experience that harsh judgment of God on our sinfulness, but we've discovered the forgiveness offered through his Son. And communion is a chance for us to reflect on that contrast between our sin and the bitter, deserved condemnation that we should have, but also God's forgiveness and grace, and it is the best recipe. And so before we continue this morning into communion, and when we're observing communion, we invite God to judge us, to judge our actions, to judge our hearts, to judge that what we're doing here matches what's in here. Before we invite him to do that, we should follow Paul's advice and do some self-judgment. Because that's a part of it. So let me ask you this morning, how is your heart? How is your belief? How is your life? David said, and we pray this, search us, God, and know our hearts. Test us and know our thoughts. And if there's any offensive way in us, lead us in the way of a citizen of heaven. Help us correct it. Help us fix it and get us back on track. Thank you for your forgiveness. Thank you for your grace. Show us now where it is that we fall short. If you would welcome the judgment of God, his evaluation of you, and you trust him that his forgiveness outweighs his condemnation, would you take out the cracker and hold it in your hand? On the night that he was betrayed, the night before he sacrificed his life for yours, Jesus asked us as his followers to gather together and hold pieces of the same bread and think of it as our piece of his body, our piece of his crucified, sacrificed body. It was given for each of us to pay the debt of our sinfulness because we are sinners. That will always be the judgment. It will always be the evaluation, always be the criticism. We are sinners. Whether we always admit it or not, we were and we are sinners. But Jesus willingly died an innocent victim so that your sin could be placed on him and nailed to the cross with him. It is forgiveness, it is grace, it is mercy mixed in with condemnation. And when we eat this bread, we acknowledge that sacrifice and the edge that it took off of the bitterness of God's judgment on our sin. And so pause before you eat this bread and reflect on the fact that while you were a sinner, Christ died for you, and thank him for saving you from your own sinfulness. And then do this in remembrance. If you've taken your bread, I invite you to open up the cup. Jesus also asked us as his followers to use a drink that we all share as a reminder of a blood covenant that we all benefit from. A blood covenant is binding. It's an agreement that you make with another. And the question of this covenant is, will you walk in the way of Christ? Will you follow him wherever he leads? Part of that means, as we've heard today, that following Christ is you're going to practice healthy biblical judgment, judging yourself and offering mutual judgment to your brothers and sisters, walking that road willingly with other Christians and believers, humbly, because it's what Jesus has asked of you. Are you willingly going to follow Christ in this? So pause, and before you drink this, consider, is Jesus my Lord? Am I willing to do what he has said? Am I willing to obey him in this and whatever else he has asked me to do? And after you have considered and prayed, do this in remembrance.